Case number 18-1037 et al., Pennsylvania Interscholastic Athletic Association, Inc., petitioner versus the National Labor Relations Board. Mr. Baskin for the petitioner, Mr. Weiss for the respondent, Mr. Schwarzwald for the intervener.
Representing the PIAA, which is the state standard-setting body for high school and middle school athletics in Pennsylvania. The PIAA to be a private employer of high school lacrosse officials, but we maintain those officials are independent contractors and that PIAA is actually a political subdivision under the Act. So for both reasons, the board order should be denied enforcement. The board decision cannot be enforced by this court because the board openly relied on a legal standard that this court rejected in the FedEx case.
It seems to me, actually, that what the board did was rely on the restatement standard that our court in Lancaster Symphony has since reaffirmed and is the standard. I understand that there was some crisscross, between whether the FedEx one standard was a substitute or was a supplement or an interpretation, but the board here applied the 10 factors. The parties have briefed this under those factors. So, and I get that there's a little bit of analogy to the way the board did it in FedEx too, but it doesn't seem like it was a whole cloth wrong standard. It was...
Well, let me push back on that, if I may. The board cited FedEx no less than 17 times in its opinion. It's FedEx. The FedEx standard that had been rejected by the court. It also, the FedEx standard that the board created goes beyond the restatement. It creates a new independent business test.
What I don't understand is what is it about the FedEx standard that they cited, or about the FedEx case that they cited, that you think is wrong, and then how that hurts you.
Sure, because it's not FedEx. It's a line of cases.
Let's start with FedEx.
What
is it about FedEx you think is wrong that they relied on?
About their FedEx decision. It's the question of supervision. I apologize because there's multiple, it's the way to address each factor.
Oh, all right. But our case did not address any of that. Our case addressed the entrepreneurial opportunity question. That's the only extent to which our FedEx was overturning their FedEx.
But actually, the court in FedEx 1 and 2 cited all the restatement factors. That was an issue in the case. Were they just relying on this entrepreneurial activity issue? In fact, FedEx took issue with the way the board had handled the issue of supervision, the issue of relying on evaluations instead of day-to-day, the actual supervision of the work, the fact that the agreements were negotiated or not.
Second FedEx case,
yes.
Actually totally rewrote what the board had been doing with respect to all factors and not just entrepreneurial activity.
I'm sorry, I just couldn't quite hear it.
We're having no trouble. It's not anybody's fault. You think that the FedEx case of ours that vacated their, I'm going to call, I don't know, let's get numbers here. So, you pick a number, FedEx 1, 2, 3. Which one are we talking about now? The one that you don't like is FedEx...
Board.
4.
Board.
Board.
Board. Board. Doesn't count.
Well, there have been two FedEx boards, but unfortunately. The first one, which we overturned, and then the second one, which we overturned. You think that the problem with that case that we found was not only having to do with entrepreneurial opportunity, but everything, but all the factors under the common law test.
But many of the factors that the
what we said in our case was the same as our previous case, and so we're not going to have a different rule for what appears to be identical. Isn't that all we said when we vacated?
No. The court went the other We, in our brief, and happened to have written the brief in FedEx too, challenged the board's application of all the factors. But I would also add that if the court is read as saying we're just repeating what we said in FedEx 1, it was in FedEx 1 that the court took issue with the board's application of many of the went through all the factors. And yes, entrepreneurial activity was a big one, but the short shrift that the board had given to supervision, the independence of the supervision, the understanding of the parties, the over-reliance on evaluations, all of those things were part of FedEx 1 and by extension FedEx 2. But it may be easier to summarize, you know, what's wrong with this. If we just go through that, this is not two fairly conflicting views. When you take whatever standard, restatement or whatever the board is saying, their application of the tests is putting their thumb on the scales. It's exaggerating the evidence of day-to-day control. They are what is very strong evidence in a long line of case authority, including in this court's FedEx, CC Eastern, and North American Van Lines, to mention a few. And the board in its analysis, when it reaches each of these points, for example, the critical factor of supervision, these officials get no supervision at the games. There's no one in New York looking at the video replays. There's no one in the stands. There's no one before telling them how to do it. Unlike Lancaster Symphony, where you have a dictatorial conductor micromanaging every aspect of the musician's performance on stage, there's no one there other than these officials who are hired and put out the instruction, call them as you see them. The essence of an independent, skilled specialist who was brought in, because PIA is not a business of officiating games. They're actually not a business at all. They're a standard-setting body. They're to certify and create a pool of officials from which the schools, the public schools mostly, who are the members, set their own and do the payment.
That's very helpful. So, I mean, in FedEx board, they held that the dress and safety standards favored employee status. And whereas in FedEx 1, we had acknowledged the dress and safety inputs but said that they did not weigh in favor of employee status. And so then you're saying when FedEx board sees that differently and then this board relies more on FedEx board that that's intention.
Correct.
Okay.
That's right.
So you said that PIA is not in business. Who pays PIA? Where do they get their revenue stream? Is that the schools?
Members pay dues. Actually, officials pay dues. It's an association of all the different constituencies.
When you say members, that's member school?
Members whose budgets are pressed and the difficult, something devastating impact of this decision, upsetting 30 years of precedent, actually 100 years that the organization has been in place, is going to be very disruptive. That's what the amicus, the Federation of High Schools, is concerned about. We're concerned about it. So that's what professionalism, where there's millions of dollars to justify regular employment status of umpires or the like, who, by the way, work hundreds of games in a season, compared to here it's 20 hours of work on average, 70% of which are paid by the schools, not by PIA. So they're supposed to be the employer. Payment except for a two-week period of what amounts to three playoff games. That's not enough to make someone an employee under long lines of precedent.
There's at least one case, maybe it was the Title VII case, that separated the period during which the officials are paid by the schools and the period during which the officials are paid by the officiating, by the PIAA analog, and said they were employers during the latter. Can you
understand? Employers only for two weeks. They said they're employers for the whole season, which is still a minimal amount of time, much less than Lancaster Symphony, where they had an average of 150 hours of music played per year, on which they were paid hourly, not flat fees, because because if the performance went wrong, they got paid extra. Here, it's a flat payment. Method of payment is supposed to be an important factor. The board said, well, to heck with that. We've got the situation where they're not paying them at all. The officials are able to pursue other careers, including as an NLRB agent and a lawyer, and to work for other organizations, refereeing, officiating at other types of games.
Could you say something about that?
Yes.
It seemed like the board said there wasn't evidence that they were refereeing other games for money. I think in your brief you cited some part of the record where it said somebody said that they were. Well, can you talk about that?
Yes, we absolutely. There was a very clear testimony to that effect, which is in the record. I know we cited it in our reply brief, and on the issue of the absence of supervision.
Not on supervision. I'm asking about the their ability to work to ref in other games.
That they do so is specifically...
Not just ability, that they actually do it, yeah.
They absolutely do it. That was the testimony. The question was asked, do they really do this? He said, absolutely. He gave examples of rec leagues and AAU events, college games.
Can you just tell me where in the joint appendix?
Yes, and it looks like I'm going
to... You can come back on rebuttal.
It's in our brief, and we have a site
back on your rebuttal.
I will do that.
What about the insurance that they provide during the period when they're being paid by the states?
I'm sorry, schools.
What about the insurance?
Right. Well, they do not. It is awkward. Yeah. They do not medical insurance, health insurance. They get liability insurance, and that's just a factor that is inconclusive. It's less than what most employees get. They don't get other types of benefits. They don't get vacations and these kinds of things. So it seems like a relatively minor factor. Although the board, made it a big deal. The official supply, so it's uncontested. The board that is a strong factor. They said, well, the PIA supplies the stadium. But that's not true. The stadiums are supplied by the schools, the public schools. And at the end, it's the thing is held at a public stadium. Hershey, I think, was the venue for the 2015 playoffs.
Let me ask you, PIA is not a, doesn't have deep pockets, and that this is really a stress on the organization. Can you put this in context? What else, other than just the right to organize and be represented in what I imagine would not be highly complex negotiations, what else is, as a practical matter, at stake here? And I'm thinking partly really of just adjacent areas of law. Title VII, workers' comp, responding at superior liability, withholding, benefits, I know this isn't the legal issue before us, but the context might be helpful to know.
Yes, I'm glad you asked. So they're being sued under the Fair Labor Standards Act by these officials. Now, open to the training sessions, whether they should be paid, the seminars they go to stay current on the rules. All of that, right at the first page or second page of the complaint, it says, well, the National Labor Relations Board has just held that they are employees, so by extension, let's go all the way. Where the money's going to come from to deal with that is beyond, anyone. And it's all because completely upsetting the understandings of all concerned, including the officials who testified, every one of them. They understood they're considered to be independent contractors. And by another area where the board rejected what this court has repeatedly held. The board said, well, that wasn't fully negotiated on equal terms, and it was take it as you leave it. FedEx won, CC Eastern, and NAVL all said that is irrelevant to the consideration for independent contractor. On that issue alone, the board decision should not be enforced. Because to enforce it, reasons they articulate, and on factors they articulate reasons that are invalid under this court's precedent. And I'm eating my rebuttal, but I want to be sure to mention that on another area that the board completely dropped the ball, did not drop the ball because they let the regional director decide it. That's the political subdivision issue. And on that point, I want to make one point and reemphasize what's in the briefs. There's no case where the board of the entity was consisted overwhelmingly of public officials and publicly appointed officials, which is the case here.
I'm a public official, but when I coach my kids' soccer, I'm not doing that ex officio as a representative of Article III courts. I'm doing that as a parent, and so it just seems like there's a missing link there, the fact that many of these folks are teachers or...
No, the missing link is completed, if you will, by looking at Article VI of the Constitution, which is JA-60, because it is very precisely spelled out with input from, by the way, which adds to the mix because they designated certain people to be there, not because they like lacrosse. These are board, not the officiators, not the coaches, although they are also involved. They're representatives of the school boards through the school board association, through the principals, the coaches, the athletic directors. They are all required to be on the board. 26 out of the 31 board members in 2015, and this was gone through in a hearing, are representatives and or employees of the public schools. And I would call your attention to Section 2A of Article 6, which says that if they drop with the public schools, they're supposed to be replaced, although they have discretion to let them stay around at the discretion of the committee that put them on the board, which again consists of public school representatives. They have the discretion to let them stay through the end of the year, but there is provision there that recognizes that because their parents who happen to work for the school board, except for two who are specifically designated as such, and one designated from the private schools, but the only school employees, and the board has failed to recognize that.
And your concern about lawsuits, if we hold that you're a state agency, won't that make you subject to suits under 1983? You wouldn't be subject to if you're a private entity.
Well, the state has already addressed these issues. The state agencies and courts have rejected the notion that the officials are employees, something that the board has overlooked. Chairman,
No. I'm talking about if the entity that you represent, which is
PIA,
is regarded as a state agency, then it could be sued under 1983 for a whole host of things that people sue state agencies and state officials under 1983.
But that's the dilemma here. They're already being treated as a state agency, for example, under the right to know laws. They are already subject to these suits, and now they're being sued from both directions.
So there are cases that I've held under 1983 that this association is state actor?
No, not because they haven't done anything wrong. They haven't been sued for that yet.
Sometimes you could be sued even if you didn't do anything wrong.
Sued for anything. But under the this situation is, the state has already declared that these officials are not independent contractors. So they were sued for in other contexts. They should not be sued for this if the 30 years of precedent is upheld.
You're talking about superior suits, but what about suits directly for, you know, the content of PIA's training or whatever? They could be more vulnerable to suit under for state action, you know, establishment clause or First Amendment, content-based, whatever.
It's possible that we have pretty clearly said we want to be recognized as a political subdivision and as an Labor Relations Act, and the defense to these other claims would be, well, that's as to the National Labor Relations Act. So we'll deal with what else comes later. The other solution is to recognize that these folks, these officials, are independent contractors. Under either approach, the board has dropped the ball. I'd like to reserve a couple more minutes for rebuttal, and thank you.
Good morning, Eric Weston, of the board. Subject to the court's question, I just have to respond in order to a number of mischaracterizations made by the petitioner. First of all, with regard to the quote-unquote FedEx test, there is no such thing as the board's FedEx test, Your Honor. The test for independent contractor status under the National Labor Relations Act is the common law test of agency. That's what both the board and this court are required to comply, to apply under the Supreme Court's opinion in United Insurance. And that's what the board applied here, completely consistent with this court's recent opinion in Lancaster Symphony Orchestra. Just to clarify what the board did in the board's FedEx 2 decision, responding to this court's opinion in FedEx 1, the board felt that it needed to clarify some of its own precedent, existing precedent, as to certain considerations it takes into account as factors that are considered along with the restatement common law factors. And in doing so, it organized those under this the heading of whether individuals are operating independent businesses with entrepreneurial opportunities for gain or loss. And so, for example, under that subheading considered traditional entrepreneurial opportunity, it considered whether individuals can work for other employers, it considered whether they have a proprietary interest in their work, it considered whether they can make decisions such as hiring assistants. And in Lancaster Symphony Orchestra, this court endorsed all of those considerations and, in fact, cited and quoted the board's decision in FedEx 2. So the actual test here, at the end of the day, is the common law test of agency, and that's what the board applied, completely consistent with this court's precedent going back 30 years to, for example, this court's decision in City Cab of Orlando. And as we point out, all of the board's analysis of the various factors are consistent with prior decisions of this court or the Supreme Court.
If we could talk about the application in this case, what about the problem raised by opposing counsel that they're only paid for 2 weeks and only for, it's an hour at a time, right?
Correct. Two-week figure is accurate, but the season is relatively short. It's not year-round.
I don't mean the whole season. I take it it's only for the playoffs that they're paid by the PIA.
Is that that's right?
That's correct. How long is that?
It's a handful of games, so it's less than a majority of the season, and that's when the officials are paid directly by PIA. Or explained, even during the regular season, PIA an employer, and it's not dispositive that during the regular season the officials are paid by the member schools. One example of a similar employment situation would be City Cab of Orlando, where you had cab drivers paid to the employer for the right to operate a cab, and then they make off of the fare paid by customers. They were not paid directly by the employer in that situation, and this court affirmed the board's finding that those individuals were employees under a certain type of employment relationship. So the purpose of the independent contractor exclusion in the Act is not to limit coverage of the Act to the most traditional form of employment relationship where you're on a shop floor and you have a foreman supervising you day to day. It was meant to apply to different types of employment relationships as long as there is a common law agency relationship. And that takes me to the second point, which is regarding the supervision factor. Contrary to the argument made by petitioner, these officials are supervised based on what they do during games. The calls are not subject to on-field review, but that only has implications for the games themselves. So, for example, an official makes a bad call, the team, the wrong side, block, but that does not mean that PIA view that and subject that official to possible discipline. In fact, if you read the official's manual and the Constitution and bylaws and extensive regulations that PIA maintains, they explicitly say if an official makes a sufficient number of bad calls or incompetent calls on the field, they're subject to discipline or removal. In addition, there is a wide work rules about how officials have to initiate games, their conduct on the field, and if they don't comply with that, PIA has the right to suspend them and to review it. And the fact that there's no on-field supervisor, again, is not dispositive. I would point to the Supreme Court's opinion, United Insurance, where you had insurance agents who went out into the field. They had no supervisor with them, but at the end of the day, the employer would review their work reports and also complaints from customers. And those exact considerations the Supreme Court held were indicative of a lack of independence and of employee status. Turning to petitioner's claim in the opening argument that PIA is not business and that it's not generating revenue, that's simply not true. This entity generates millions of dollars in revenue. It's paid both by officials and the schools. It is a significant nonprofit corporation in the state of Pennsylvania. And furthermore, even if it was not that degree of revenue, these type of policy considerations are simply irrelevant because Congress's intent in creating independent contractor exclusion was to have the board and the courts apply the common law of agency. Neither the board nor this court are supposed to take into account policy considerations, even assuming that there are any records supporting these claims of disaster if collective bargaining is allowed.
So just help us think about, I sort of was grouping factors 2, 8, and 10 together, and maybe I'm failing to appreciate the nuances, but it seems like, you know, whether the putative contractor is engaged in a distinct occupation or business, or it's the same occupation or business, it's like when the plumber shows up at the McDonald's, you know, is the plumber's in one business, the McDonald's is in another, and it supports the fact that the plumber is an independent contractor, not an employee. Whether the work is part of the regular business of the employer, again, you know, is somebody who's, you know, doing legal work for my small firm in the same legal field as the firm that I'm running, that would tend to favor an employee relationship, and whether the principal is or is not in the same business, it seems to me it's kind of going to the same question. And that factor here, I take it that Mr. Baskin says, you know, PIA is in the business of standard setting, the officials are in the business of officiating at games, and your response is?
Our response brief is that that's simply not the case. The provision of approved officials is one of the main services that PIA provides to its customer member schools, and one of the main reasons that the schools pay dues to PIA. The sort of grand distinction that the petitioner draws in its brief simply cannot. Could always draw a distinction like that. For example, you could say, you know, Walmart is in the business of operating sufficient supply chains, and its employees on the shop floor in the business of selling retail goods. That type of distinction is not what the common law is contemplating. What it's contemplating is your job. If you bring in, say, a plumber to do something in your McDonald's, that's clearly in a different business. But here, people business of offering officials to its member schools, and in fact, simply a neutral intermediary, but it's involved at all stages of the process. So it trains, certifies the officials, it continuously issues rule interpretations and trains the officials on those changing rule interpretations. It supervises the officials for the reasons we explained. It has extensive about how the officials actually do the work, and when the officials take the field, they do so in the name of PIA, and are actually explicitly prohibited from wearing any badge if they work for a different business.
And your strongest factors of all of these factors, I mean, entrepreneurial opportunity would seem in a way similar, well, would seem to favor employee status. Other factors that really stand out for you, without just going through them sequentially?
Right. Instrumentalities and tools the board found conclusive, but the first factor is the right to control the means and manner of work, because here the PIA, these extensive regulations and that it requires officials to comply, and it extensively threatens officials that if they're not compliant, they face potential discipline. So there's very extensive oversight.
Wouldn't that happen with any independent contractor if they were independent contractors and they didn't do a good job on the field? They wouldn't be rehired again for another game or for the next day. Why is this post hoc discipline or review sufficient to make them employees?
Well, the distinction we point out in our brief, which is between whether you have control over the actual means and manner of work versus just control over the results. So if you have a plumber as an independent contractor, on the field. So I think the key distinction.
Well, you might not hire him again if he violated, I don't know, District of Columbia regulations regarding the way in which the pipes were fitted. That would be a reason that you would not rehire him again.
Certainly, the results of the work. You wouldn't have, in this case, rules saying you have to have a certain time when you're doing the plumbing. You have to have the correct heroes officiating mechanics. That might be, you know, plumbing mechanics. You have to position yourself in a certain way. Or you wouldn't have a situation where you would say the plumber can wear jewelry while he's doing the job. In a typical independent contract, the plumber can come in and do the work in his expertise without oversight about how he's doing it.
In the FedEx cases, which we take the proposition they were ultimately held to be independent contractors, correct?
Correct.
Well, they couldn't wear UPS labels on their clothes or on their cars. They couldn't drive a car that didn't have a FedEx label on the car. They had to take the label on, and if they wanted to be do something else, they would then take it off. I can't remember the case exactly, although I did participate in it pretty heavily. I believe they had to wear something that indicated they were FedEx. That was for the security of the customers, even though they were independent contractors. So clothing alone can't be the answer.
No, absolutely not.
And I'm not even sure how it cuts.
Well, this goes to our positive. So you have situations like FedEx. You may have employees who have a uniform, for example, and that consideration that typically favors employee status, but because of the further circumstances of that case, this court held that they're independent contractors. And I think the key there was, the board itself was ignoring or was not providing sufficient weight to entrepreneurial opportunity, which colored some of the other factors.
About the argument that counsel will make when it comes back up on rebuttal and showing me the pages of the joint appendix where somebody testified that, in fact, they are able to get paying jobs as refs.
Yes, Your Honor. The point of the pages is page 30 and 31 of the joint appendix. And what the testimony is from one of the PAs, and it's could work for other employers. He said he could, and but our first two would be that he was specifically referring to their ability to do so. He did not that any of the officials in this case had. So, and second, referring to people in general. But I'd just like to emphasize for the court that this case only involves a unit of approximately 140 lacrosse officials in the Pittsburgh area. So, and maybe, for example, official, there are potentially work for. We're not conceding that's the case, but that's what this testimony suggested. But there's certainly testimony suggesting that in the Pittsburgh area, lacrosse leagues, that individuals can go and get paying work.
The very next line is expressly asking about lacrosse. You think that it wasn't, I'm looking at JA30, you think that it wasn't present in the mind of the person who was answering that these were questions about lacrosse?
My the individual is referring to just PA officials in general. And furthermore,
just to go on the next page, 31, do you know of any that have jobs or careers beyond officiating lacrosse? Yes, absolutely. Do you know any that you could tell us about? Well, lacrosse, I don't know. But Mr. Seneca, he's a registered, he's an attorney. All right, I'll hold this until I have a chance to ask.
Well, just to respond, you know, if you're a contract, interpretation is also eminently reasonable, but my first point would be that, you know, the court certainly owes deference to the board's readings of the facts, and I think it's fair to read that as not being a concrete example.
Did the board reference this particular back and forth?
Not specifically. Was insufficient evidence, and that takes me to my second point, which is that, you know, to establish an independent contractor relationship because it is an exclusion to the definition of employee in Section 2.3 of the Act. To the extent that testimony is unclear, the time to appeal. And also, to the board point, this is kind of the board is making, because even if the court assumes that these individuals could work for other employers, the more important point is what this court held in Lancaster Symphony Orchestra, and it was what the board has consistently held, which is that the mere ability to work for other employers, if you're a part-time employee, is, quote, minuscule evidence of entrepreneurial opportunity, and if that's the only evidence in the record, this constellation of considerations or this factor with employee status as it did in that case.
Right, there seems to be some kind of people view this factor differently. The question I thought in our FedEx one was, is the nature of the way you do this job something that admits yields to entrepreneurial effort? So you could subcontract, you could do work faster and smarter, you could sort of figure out ways to do the delivery work in that case, or here the refereeing, that would be entrepreneurial. For example, one might imagine a ref who would say, I will come and give a rules talk to your school for 15 minutes before the game if you hire me to do that, or I will, do special things that make me a more popular coach to be hired. They can't substitute someone else. It's hard to see a lot of entrepreneurial opportunity, but the part-timeness and the fact that they also work as an attorney, I think you're right, under Lancaster Symphony, that's not the test. Otherwise, every single part-time job would be an independent contractor job.
That's correct. Reasoning and this course reasoning, and to go to your bottom point, Symphony Orchestra made that point that the inquiry is, to use your language, whether an individual can work smarter rather than just harder to make more money. And as the board noted here, that's simply not the case for these officials. And that has implications for a variety of factors, including the fact that, for example, they're paid by the game. While that's true, this is not a sort of piecework situation where, say, you're producing widgets, and if you come up with a more efficient technique to produce widgets, you can make more money.
Let me ask you the question that I asked Mr. Bassin, which is, what else is at stake here from your perspective? It just seems like a curious case.
Yes, Ron. Well, so this is exceeding the basis of the board's decision, but there was some testimony in the record. The board didn't need to, so I'm not testimony that some of the officials in the Pittsburgh area, the school district had, making less money, they would be making $100 before per game or something along those lines. And that seemed to be one of the motivating factors. But I don't know the background employees wanted to exercise the federal law. I think the relevant question to the court is that they spent.
I'm not asking that so much as the agency, the employer, employee versus contractor has a lot of other footprints in the law, and whether there are any areas that you administer where there are analogous inquiries where this is either supported or would spill over to them.
Just in terms of factual, similar factual situations, Your Honor, this court's decision in City Capital was a similar situation just in terms of the employment relationship. I think Lancaster Symphony Orchestra is a very close analogy, even though there are distinctions in that case where you have skilled individuals who can choose when or when they don't work, and they come in for a relatively brief part of the year and have relatively brief assignments. I also think the Supreme Court's seminal case on this question is a very narrow situation where you have individuals who go out into the field and they are not supervised when they're making the key decisions. In that case, it was, negotiating and selling insurance policies to individuals, which took a certain amount of expertise. There was no supervisor sitting over their shoulder telling them, you know, whether what they were doing was right or wrong. But the Supreme Court very clearly held that the fact that the employer nevertheless maintained some kind of back-end review and, in fact, would consider customer complaints very similar to the school evaluations during a regular season here, that showed employee status. And in fact, here we also have the postseason where it's even more clear because PA cuts off the school's intent, essentially directs the officials directly. And I see that if the court has any questions about the political subdivision issue, I'm happy to answer them.
What about Mr. Baskin's point that under Article 6, Section 2, A, B, C, et cetera, et cetera, these are many members of the board are representatives of associations of and are employed by the state as school administrators, school teachers, school coaches, et cetera?
Yes, well, I think you're not in our brief. If you read the PA Constitution closely, there's no individuals need to be public school employees, and in fact, nearly 200 of the PA schools are private schools. So there's simply insufficient evidence as to the school employment of these individuals, and certainly nothing in the Constitution itself requires public school employment. Now, one appointment from the Secretary of Education, and there is a provision that references a secretary who's supposed to be a school board at the time of appointment, but I think, as we explained in our brief section of the board's decision in the Research Foundation of City University of New York case, in that case, you have an entity affiliated with a public university, and the majority of the members on the board of directors happen to be employees of the public university. But what the board explained in that case is that they were directors of this third-party entity because of that employment. They simply happen to also be public employees. That does not mean that they were...
I will ask Mr. Baskin, so he's prepared on the public employee part, but he also pointed out that they have to be employed. Yeah, that's required by the Constitution, that's right?
Well, they need to be requirement to be a public school, and there's also the provision which says even if they're fired by, say, a public school, they can remain on the board until the next round of elections. And what's important is it goes to this broader point again that simply because you're a public employee while you're serving on this extracurricular board, that does not make you responsible to public officials in the meaning of the Hawkins County prong two, because the public institutions have no role in appointing you to this board. They do not say decisions you make while you're on this board. They have no authority to remove you from the board. So that simply is not...
Well, they can remove you by removing you as an employee.
Well, they cannot. If you get fired from your public school employment, you remain the board of directors of PIA for the next round of elections.
At discretion of the PIA.
Correct. Ultimately up to this PIA's board of directors. An individual school cannot force an individual off of the board of directors if it wants them off and if it disagrees with their decision-making, as unlikely as that scenario is in the first place.
This may be a question more for Mr. Baskin, but is the relationship between PIAA and the National Federation of High School Associations a voluntary, like, has PIAA chosen that, or is the Federation of High School Associations hired PIAA?
My understanding is that it's a voluntary association. There's no evidence in the record against the employer's burden on any of these issues. One significant any control dictated by this voluntary association, as this court held in the city capital of Orlando, that's sort of irrelevant to the question of employee status because it's a voluntary relationship that PA entered into. So there's certainly no sense that this high entity dictates anything regarding the officials who are at issue in this case. Unless the court has any further questions, I believe the intervener union has 3 minutes. Follow me.
Can I just ask one more question?
Sure.
Again, on this question of the membership under the Pennsylvania statute, which requires the association to adopt certain things with respect to the board, ensure that the membership of its board of directors include the following. It says one member representing school boards of directors who is an elected member of a school board of directors. Doesn't that suggest public or private school board? That's the one you're talking about.
Who's required to be a member of the school board at the time of election to the board of directors. But regardless to be a public school employee, what interest groups needed to have representatives. So, for example, there needed to be an interest group representative of the Public School Board Association of Pennsylvania. But as we explained, corporation similar to PIA itself, it does not mean as the employer with no evidence and jurisdictionally barred because it did not make this argument before the board that the state involved in actual appointment of individuals and the request to the board, PIA explicitly that the state is not involved in the appointment. So the employer is making that is that even though the state has no involvement in the appointment, some who are appointed not by the state may be public school employees. But again, it's simply not the test under Hawkins County. This court's binding decision in MMC, where this court affirmed an inquiry is whether you are appointable by, movable by public officials. So it does not matter to be a public employee if you are not appointed to the extracurricular board by, you know, your public employer itself, which is not the case here.
Okay, thank you. I think you're right. We did forget that we have an intervener. Sorry about that.
I apologize for not mentioning it.
No, it's my fault. Mr. Schwarzfeld? Of course,
thank you, Your Honor.
If you think the NLRB adequately handled it, you don't have to say any more.
There are a few things I'd like to comment about and try and stay within my time limits, Your Honor. First of all, as was just being pointed out by counsel for the board, these groups that appoint members of the PIAA board are not public bodies. They are associations that have been formed of athletic directors or whatever by their own means for their own purposes, but they're not public purposes, they're not public bodies. So we don't think under Hardin County that there's any real argument that this is a that this PIAA should be treated as a public body. So we think that is clear. There was a question, two other things I'd like to address. One question was, what is at stake here? I mean, if you look particularly at the amicus brief that was filed by the Association of Minor League Umpires, which is a local union of the Office and Professional Employees International Union, the same union that's seeking to organize these employees. And they represent umpires all the way through baseball except for professional baseball. But in that brief, they pointed out all the other sports that have the cases that indicate that these people are represented even though they are very much like these officials. They work part-time, the people that work football, on weekends often have other careers and jobs, and these are other things that they do. And they point out baseball, there's of course the Umpires Association in baseball, football, the NFL officials, arena football, soccer, the NBA basketball, and golf, officials in all those different sports are organized and are treated as employees even though they have the same right that these officials have, which is they control the game and make the decisions about what is going on in the field.
Do any of them have a short time of being paid by the association?
Well, for example, the NFL people work on weekends. You know, they may work more games, but that's because it's a sport with a longer season than this particular lacrosse season. In this case, there are a number of officials who work more than one sport, some as many as 8 different sports. So over the course of a year, they may work a great deal for PIA under PIA's auspices. But each sport has its own season, which is set by PIAA.
And the unit that's seeking representation is the lacrosse officials, not a broader unit.
Well, that's right. But the lacrosse officials are one unit. You know, if a position is upheld, one can organize officials in other sports. And there are individuals who do take part in more than one sport as officials.
Are there any... I'm sorry, just to go back to this question. I appreciate the point about weekends, but how many games are we talking about where they're actually paid by the PIAA?
Well, the season, I think, for lacrosse is like eight weeks, and there's maybe 2 or 3 games a week. I think the number I remember is between 20 and 24.
But those aren't one where they're directly paid, right? Those are ones where the schools are paying. How many are where they are directly paid?
Well, those are just the finals, and I think there's no more than 3, perhaps 4 games. I'm not sure how many steps it takes.
So are the examples that you gave, are there others where the association that has been held to be the employer only actually itself pays for 2 or 3 games?
Well, these are longer professional seasons. Mm-hmm. Usually they are longer
seasons. This is a longer season also, that is, it's 8 weeks, but it seems unusual, and I'm just really asking whether it is unusual that for the vast bulk of the season, the payment comes from the schools. I understand the point, but I'm just asking as a fact question. Are there others where for all but 2 games, the payment comes from the school rather than from the association?
Well, look, the payment comes from the schools because PIAA has mandated that.
No, I understand that argument as well. I just want to, as a fact question, are these others that you're talking about, baseball, football, et cetera, are they paid by the school or are they paid by the association?
In PIAA itself?
Or any other example that you wanted, yeah.
I believe in PIAA itself because of the way it has mandated.
I see.
That the schools do the payment except when it gets to the final state eliminations.
And do you know with respect outside of Pennsylvania whether that's the way that this is done?
If you're talking about Scholastic officials have a series of different kinds of operations across the country, and I don't know enough about the details to know exactly what it is, but as I said, PIA specifically says the schools are to pay. That could be changed, in our view, under PIA's authority. And if we negotiated, we would probably want to change that. But that's something that it seems clear to us PIAA has the authority to do because they told the schools, you're to pay. That's done on their order and their specific statements.
Further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Baskin, we'll give you another 2 minutes.
Thank you.
Can you just begin, if you wouldn't mind, by addressing those pages or what other pages you have from the joint appendix on the question of whether they can whether they actually do work outside of the lacrosse game.
Yes. Well, the counsel for the board correctly identified the pages but completely mischaracterized the testimony, which you actually caught on to, and I'm just looking at the question is, officials, are they officiate non-PIA events? Yes, they are. Do they sometimes do that to your knowledge? Absolutely. And then he lists a series of events to his knowledge. And specifically, are they talking about lacrosse? Of course they are. He's there to testify about lacrosse. That's in line 21 on that page. Talks about playing what happens if they go to Ohio or Pennsylvania.
Again, reading closely, it says absolutely they could officiate. They could officiate.
Well, and then he pursues that further. Do you know of any that have jobs or careers beyond officiating lacrosse? Yes, absolutely. He doesn't equivocate. I think use of the word could, it combines
specifically is the testimony in the record that, and I should add, not disputed by anybody. The union was right there with their officials. Nobody got up there to testify to say, nope, we aren't allowed, we don't do it. In fact, the only testimony, the only record evidence is right here, and it's clear and undisputed. And so to pretend that they are not able to do this is simply false. And without this limited time, a good bit to unpack, you also referenced asking about the 2 weeks of playoffs. Where does that appear in the record? Joint Appendix 37 and 95. 95 is the actual schedule. You can count the days that they participate, and it's just this short round of playoffs to distinguish it 2 weeks, 4 games, and then, of course, it's not 4 games, it goes down to 1 game at the end, starting with a round of 16, and nothing in the professional leagues. All these leagues are referenced by the amicus brief. I was almost going to call your attention to them in my argument, because compare them, that's the difference. So, organizations, and I don't know where this concept came from that the PIA is flush with cash. There's no evidence of any type in the record about that. What we are baseball leagues, the NFL and the like, operate, and when you look at them, they have seasons where the minor umpires case, which is cited, the reports in the record, that they work something like 150 games with 2 days off for the entire summer. That's completely false what's going on in this case. These are high school and middle school athletics, a public service that the PIAA is performing, and to compare it to professional leagues shows why this model that the board is now adopting, after 30 years of well-settled understandings under the Big East case, which even that was more professional because it was college, but it was not professional. This is a much stronger case even than the Big East situation. And I will, again,
can I just pause over that? Do you know, are there any other secondary school officials anywhere else in the country who are regarded as employees for NLRA purposes?
I do not have information about, certainly not. This is first time it's ever happened at the board, and we have the amicus brief of the NFHS, which indicates that this would be a sea change around the country. So they clearly are concerned. Haven't attempted to look at all the otherwise, particularly since the board was saying they don't count. They certainly should count for something in Pennsylvania. So I can't swear to admit I'm guided by what the NFHS has said, which is that it really, the only implication one can take from that is it is not happening elsewhere. It should not happen elsewhere. That's why this case is important. And it is certainly the first time that it's happened with the board. I want to come back to the notion of the 200 private schools that are on the PIA membership. Unmentioned is that there are 1,400 schools, of which 85% of them are public schools. As a result, not a single private school is on the board, was on the board in 2015 when this case went through, other than one member who was required to be on the board because of the legislation. This is all a function of the very formation of PIAA. It was started by all the public schools to keep them straight. Then there was a limited exemption to allow certain qualified schools, to come in, but they have always been a small minority. So when he then went into, there's no telling that they're not really there because they're public employees or public officials. To the contrary, it's exactly why they're there. They're put on by a district committee, which itself consists of, and you have to go through all the rules of the Constitution to figure this out. It's a little convoluted, but there is testimony about it in the hearing as well.
The district committees are themselves public bodies?
Yes, they have designated in proportions, again dominated by the committees of the membership, districts of the membership. The membership is 85%.
Oh, so they're not governmental bodies. They're committees of the membership.
Each district gets an allotment of the number of its representatives from the district to the board. And as a result of that, the public schools have a controlling interest guaranteed, regardless of these additional constituencies that have been added in over time.
The ones that are mentioned in the section that you referred to the Constitution, the Pennsylvania School Boards Association, the Pennsylvania School Boards Association again, Pennsylvania Association of School Administrators, Pennsylvania Association of Secondary School Principals, the Pennsylvania State Athletic Directors Association, are those public bodies?
No.
I know that they have members who are.
Yes, they're not tax exempt organizations like PIA itself, but their membership consists entirely of the different constituencies. They are representative of, just as they would have standing to sue under representation of the interests of, for example,
well,
school boards.
Would they be regarded as public entities of Pennsylvania? Or just private entities that have members who are?
Who are?
Not all. For example, the schools, and most of the schools, as we know, are public. But the membership are the schools. The criterion is not publicness. The criteria is being a secondary educational institution, right?
Right, but some of the ones represented the school boards. School boards are public.
By analogy, there is a National Association of Assistant U.S. Attorneys, every member of which is an assistant U.S. attorney and therefore a federal official. But no one thinks that the National Association itself is a federal agency or any other kind of agency. Is this analogous or not analogous?
First, to say that they are public bodies themselves, but that they represent public bodies, and that therefore they are bound to select public officials and employees of public officials, the school boards that are overwhelmingly public school boards. You just cannot ignore, the board should not ignore the realities of the situation. And they said it again today. The only public official is this state official who's designated. Well, school boards are public officials also, and the employees who are members of the PIAA board all report up the chain to these school boards. So that is another avenue of appointment. And I refer you to the Northern Community Health case, another board case, in which 12 of 16 board members of an otherwise private entity were appointed by local boards of supervisors. The board is acting like it hasn't, and they just were deliberately obtuse in the decision, which by the board's decision, it was only the regional director. The board itself never really, they did not grant the request for review on that point.
For our purposes, it's effectively affirming it, though, right?
But they did not wrestle with the statutory issue, which we cited the case that says they're supposed to do that. If they haven't, you should at a minimum remand it to let them do it.
Well, if... I don't think this is important. If the board affirms judgment of an ALJ and the ALJ wrestles with this issue, that would be sufficient in terms of wrestling. We don't require the board itself to do the wrestling.
There's a difference. The ALJ has issued a decision. Exceptions are filed, and the board must consider those. In a request for review situation through the regional director in an election, it's discretionary of the board whether to grant the review, and only then do they get a brief on the merits. So they did not address the merits. Even though they dropped the from the regional director, they did not grant the request for review, so they can't now claim that they considered this seriously. And if you read his very well-reasoned opinion, he hits first rightly on this issue of what are you talking about, no public officials? The entire board of the PLA consists of public officials and employees of public officials. So, and the vast majority, the 85.
Let me just ask, do you have more questions? Okay, we're at, why don't you have 8 minutes?
I appreciate your time.
All right, thank you. We'll take the matter under submission.